Hey Boo.
We're starting chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets called The Polyjuice Potion. They stepped off the stone staircase at the top, and Professor McGonagall rapped on the door. It opened silently, and they entered. Professor McGonagall told Harry to wait and left him there, alone. Harry looked around. One thing was certain. Of all the teachers' offices Harry had visited so far this year, Dumbledore's was by far the most interesting. If he hadn't been scared out of his wits that he was about to be thrown out of school, he would have been very pleased to have a chance to look around it. It was a large and beautiful circular room full of funny little noises. A number of curious silver instruments stood on spindle-legged tables, whirling and emitting little puffs of smoke. The walls were covered with portraits of old headmasters and headmistresses, all of whom were snoozing gently in their frames. There was also an enormous claw-footed desk, and sitting on the shelf behind it, a shabby, tattered wizard's hat, the sorting hat. Harry hesitated. He cast a wary eye around the sleeping witches and wizards on the walls. Surely it couldn't hurt if he took the hat down and tried it on again, just to see, just to make sure it had put him in the right house. He walked quietly around the desk, lifted the hat from its shelf, and lowered it slowly onto his head. It was much too large and slipped down over his eyes, just as it had done the last time he'd put it on. Harry stared at the black inside of the hat, waiting. Then, a small voice said in his ear, "Bee in your bonnet, Harry Potter?" "Yes," Harry muttered. "Sorry to bother you. I wanted to ask..." "You've been wondering whether I put you in the right house," said the hat smartly. "Yes, you were particularly difficult to place, but I stand by what I said before." Harry's heart leapt. "You would have done well in Slytherin." Harry's stomach plummeted. He grabbed the point of the hat and pulled it off. It hung limply on his head, on his hand, grubby and faded. Harry pushed it back onto its shelf, feeling sick. "You're wrong," he said aloud to the still and silent hat. It didn't move. Harry backed away, watching it. Then a strange gagging noise made him wheel around. He wasn't alone after all. Standing on a golden perch behind the door was a decrepit-looking bird that resembled a half-plucked turkey. Harry stared at it, and the bird looked balefully back, making its gagging noise again. Harry thought it looked very ill. Its eyes were dull, and even as Harry watched, a couple more feathers fell out of its tail. Harry was just thinking that all he needed was for Dumbledore's pet bird to die while he was alone in the office with it, when the bird burst into flames. Harry yelled in shock and backed away into the desk. He looked feverishly around in case there was a glass of water somewhere, but he couldn't see one. The bird, meanwhile, had become a fireball. It gave one loud shriek, and the next second there was nothing but a smoldering pile of ash on the floor. The office door opened. Dumbledore came in, looking very somber. "Professor," Harry gasped. "Your bird. I couldn't do anything. He just caught fire." To Harry's astonishment, Dumbledore smiled. "About time, too," he said. "He's been looking dreadful for days. I've been telling him to get a move on." He chuckled at the stunned look on Harry's face. "Fox is a phoenix, Harry. Phoenixes burst into flames when it is time for them to die and are reborn from the ashes. Watch him." Harry looked down in time to see a tiny, wrinkled newborn bird poke its head out of the ashes. It was quite as ugly as the old one. "It's a shame you had to see him on burning day," said Dumbledore, seating himself behind his desk. "He's really very handsome most of the time, wonderful red and gold plumage. Fascinating creatures, phoenixes. They can carry immensely heavy loads, their tears have healing powers, and they make highly faithful pets." As usual in early Harry Potter, she outlines the exact 3 plot points that are needed from phoenixes. In the shock of Fox's catching fire, Harry had forgotten what he was there for, but it all came back to him as Dumbledore settled himself in the high chair behind the desk and fixed Harry with his penetrating light blue stare. Before Dumbledore could speak another word, however, the door of the office flew open with an almighty bang, and Hagrid burst in, a wild look in his eyes, his balaclava perched on the top of his shaggy black head, and the dead rooster still swinging from his hand. "It wasn't Harry, Professor Dumbledore," said Hagrid urgently. "I was talking to him seconds before that kid was found. He never had time, sir." Dumbledore tried saying something, but Hagrid went on ranting, waving the rooster around in his agitation, sending feathers everywhere. "It can't have been him. I'll swear in front of the Ministry of Magic if I have to." "Hagrid, I..." "You got the wrong boy, sir. I know Harry never..." "Hagrid," said Dumbledore loudly, "I do not think that Harry attacked those people." "Oh," said Hagrid, the rooster falling limply at his side. "Right. I'll wait outside then, headmaster." And he stomped out, looking embarrassed. "You don't think it was me, Professor?" Harry repeated hopefully, as Dumbledore brushed rooster feathers off his desk. "No, Harry, I don't," said Dumbledore, though his face was somber again. "But I still want to talk to you." Harry waited nervously while Dumbledore considered him, the tips of his long fingers together. "I must ask you, Harry, whether there's anything you'd like to tell me," he said gently. "Anything at all." Harry didn't know what to say next. He thought of Malfoy shouting, "You'll be next, Mudbloods," and of the polyjuice potion simmering away in Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. Then he thought of the disembodied voice he had heard twice and remembered what Ron said. Hearing voices no one else can hear isn't a good sign, even in the wizarding world. He thought, too, about what everyone else was saying about him, and his growing dread that he was somehow connected with Salazar Slytherin. "No," said Harry. "There isn't anything, Professor." The double attack on Justin and Nearly Headless Nick turned what had hitherto been nervousness into a real panic. Curiously, it was Nearly Headless Nick's fate that seemed to worry most people. What could possibly do that to a ghost? People had asked each other. What terrible power could harm someone who was already dead? There was almost a stampede to book seats on the Hogwarts Express so that students could go home for Christmas. "At this rate, we'll be the only ones left," Ron told Harry and Hermione. "Us, Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle. What a jolly holiday it's going to be." Crabbe and Goyle, who always did whatever Malfoy did, had signed up to stay over the holidays. But Harry was glad that most people were leaving. He was tired of people skirting around him in the corridors, as though he were about to sprout fangs or spit poison, tired of all the muttering, pointing, and hissing as he passed. Fred and George, however, found all this very funny. They went out of their way to march ahead of Harry down the corridors, shouting, "Make way for the heir of Slytherin! Seriously evil wizard coming through!" Percy was deeply disappointed of this behavior. "It is not a laughing matter," he said coldly. "Oh, get out of the way, Percy," said Fred. "Harry's in a hurry." "Yeah, he's off to the Chamber of Secrets for a cup of tea with his fanged servant," said George, chortling. Ginny didn't find it amusing either. "Oh, don't," she wailed every time Fred asked Harry loudly who he was planning to attack next, or when George pretended to ward Harry off with a large clove of garlic when they met. Harry didn't mind. It made him feel better that Fred and George at least thought the idea of his being Slytherin's heir was quite ludicrous. But their antics seemed to be aggravating Draco Malfoy, who looked increasingly sour each time he saw them at it. "It's because he's bursting to say it's really him," said Ron knowingly. "You know how he hates anyone beating him at anything, and you're getting all the credit for his dirty work." "Not for long," said Hermione in a satisfied tone. "The polyjuice potion's nearly ready now. We'll be getting the truth out of him any day now." At last the term ended, and a silence deep as the snow on the grounds descended on the castle. Harry found it peaceful rather than gloomy, and enjoyed the fact that he, Hermione, and the Weasleys had the run of Gryffindor Tower, which meant that they could play Exploding Snap loudly without bothering anyone and practice dueling in private. Fred, George, and Ginny had chosen to stay at school rather than visit Bill in Egypt with Mr. and Mrs. Weasley. Percy, who disapproved of what he termed their childish behavior, didn't spend much time in the Gryffindor common room. He had already told them pompously that he was only staying over Christmas because it was his duty as a prefect to support the teachers during this troubled time. Christmas morning dawned, cold and white. Harry and Ron, the only ones left in their dormitory, were woken very early by Hermione, who burst in, fully dressed, and carrying presents for them both. "Wake up," she said loudly, pulling back the curtains at the window. "Hermione, you're not supposed to be in here," said Ron, shielding his eyes against the light. "Merry Christmas to you, too," said Hermione, throwing him his present. "I've been up for nearly an hour, adding more lace wings to the potion. It's ready." Harry sat up, suddenly awake. "Are you sure?" "Positive," said Hermione, shifting Scabbers the rat so that she could sit down on the end of Ron's four-poster bed. "If we're going to do it, I say it should be tonight." At that moment, Hedwig swooped into the room carrying a very small package in her beak. "Hello," Harry said happily as she landed on his bed. "Are you speaking to me again?" She nibbled his ear in an affectionate sort of way, which was a far better present than the one that she had brought him, which turned out to be something from the Dursleys. They had sent Harry a toothpick and a note telling him to find out whether he'd be able to stay at Hogwarts for the summer vacation, too. The rest of Harry's Christmas presents were far more satisfactory. Hagrid had sent him a large tin of treacle toffee, which Harry had decided to soften by the fire before eating. Ron had given him a book called Flying with the Cannons, a book of interesting facts about his favorite Quidditch team. And Hermione had bought him a luxury eagle feather quill. I love that Ron gave him a book about his favorite team, not Harry's favorite team. It's like if I were to, you know, give one of my friends a book about the Packers. It's a little weird. Harry opened the last present to find a new hand-knitted sweater from Mrs. Weasley and a large plum cake. He read her card with a fresh surge of guilt, thinking about Mr. Weasley's car, which hadn't been seen since its crash with the Whomping Willow, and the bout of rule-breaking he and Ron were planning next. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you liked that, my kitten boo. We'll see next time what their secret adventure will come to. I love you, kitten boo. Good night.